It's Tuesday, November 19th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 320 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 28 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name is Chad.
And my name is Pat.
All right, here we go.
Oh, man, haven't seen each other for a week, right? Yeah.
What? Yeah.
These are getting released over the course of 3 weeks, but they were recorded in one sitting, which means that my throat can now screw up for a whole bunch of weeks, and we still have content coming out. All right, so where we left off last time, and where we're going to pick up this time, is we want to give some examples about how we've made this work.
Oh, my God, is this a series?
Yeah.
Are we doing a series? We haven't done a series in a long time.
You know, actually, I do believe, and I could be wrong, outside of episode 115, this is the first time we've ever had a series go beyond two parts.
Really?
Yeah.
What about that horrible one we
did? The game design series? Yeah. Memory series.
Very amorphous.
Well, I don't think we marked as a series. I don't see we said like design series part one, design series part two. I think we subtitled them all. Mm. And so they weren't treated as one sort of continuous episode. But anyway.
It doesn't matter. They'll tell us on the forums if we're wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Somebody
whether we're right or not.
So, all right. So let's talk about times that we have seen this work or fail, or ideas we have for making this work or fail. And I want to start with one that John gave me, and he wanted me to cover on the show, which is what he called the Irwin subversion. Or maybe I called it that. But he talked about how a character he played once named Irwin subverted this idea. Because John was playing on a MUD, okay, an online role-playing game. Very high RP, very deep characters, a lot of game master run events, things like that. And everybody in there was playing, typically speaking, to use our prior nomenclature, a level two boss, beautiful and unique snowflake. Mm. They all had outlandish classes and races, and everybody was a total badass at everything they did, and their characters.
You came in on one Pegasi.
Yeah.
I came in on two, one for each foot.
And they all had absurd descriptions for their characters, and everybody was a badass and all stuff. And John decided to go the completely reverse route. In this sea of beautiful and unique snowflakes, he played a guy who was an overweight, unskilled city bureaucrat who technically did have some healing abilities, but really didn't use them that often, and he really hadn't bothered leveling them up that high. And in this particular game, you leveled them up through use. And John's character became one of the most memorable characters in that game, and indeed one of the most important in the world plot, and was used regularly by the game masters for events because of the fact that his character stood out so wildly against the rest of the background by being completely unremarkable. Because we've talked about if everybody's special, nobody's special. Well, that kind of also works in reverse.
Right.
If everybody's special and you're not, that kind of makes you special.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very interesting way of reversing it out of, you know, we talked about in Star Trek, the one guy who's got to play a member of the Q. Well, imagine if everybody's playing a member of the Q and you're playing the one regular human.
Can I play Captain Sisko? Because he decked Q.
You see what I'm saying, though, that you know, playing a character below the level actually, in a way, does make that character stand out from the rest of the herd.
That is interesting. And is that sustainable in a typical role-playing game? Because a typical role-playing game tend to be these sort of rollicking adventures. Would a person who plays that, I could play it because I don't really care what happens in combat.
It would depend on the person.
Yeah.
I think for many people, it would be difficult because being unremarkable and incapable would be fun to an extent.
Yeah.
But I think over time, if you don't have the right person playing it, they would probably get frustrated with it. And I think if you don't have the right game master running it,
then you have the boy hostage.
Well, the game master might start to get frustrated constantly trying to come up with a plot that, oh, yeah, there's trolls coming down from the hills And there's also something for the boring guy to do. And somebody has to file the paperwork.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, and
Galactus.
That gets back to the... Because he went to night college.
Yeah, he wants to be an accountant.
Yeah, he is going for a CPA.
Now look, in a life that long, you learn accounting.
Look, you got to.
The real question here is, and this is one that I know the people on the forums have been burning to know since last week when it went unasked and unanswered, is Galactus, Unicron, who wins? Dan?
Unicron.
Wayne?
Galactus.
I knew the answers that I get from both of them.
Yeah, but which one would do my taxes? That's what I really
Galactus.
Wanted. Yeah, Galactus, because Galactus went to night school. Now, Galactus in fairness, got his associate's
Galactus
degree.
Galactus might not do your taxes. But
what
Galactus,
did Unicron do?
But Galactus will eat the IRS.
He took on a robot with a mustache.
Yeah.
That is true. Galactus has never taken on a robot with a mustache.
And yes, you're welcome, everybody.
Wayne and I are both wrong.
Yes.
Unicron versus Galactus, you know damn well who wins.
Batman.
Exactly.
This is true.
Why did we
And who would do your taxes? Yeah. Batman.
Or Batman would have somebody, Lucius Fox.
Yeah.
I don't know why we even had any foreplay on that one.
I know. It's just we're just foolish. That's
all right, so how would you run a game Sprinkles. Like that? Let's say that you're playing a game that
it gets back to the thing where you know you have all your accountants and then you have Galactus and he hasn't gone to night school yet. Either the game is all about the accountants or the game is all about Galactus.
Do you
and
feel
the same thing going the other way?
Yeah. Do you feel it's possible to reconcile? I mean, if we go back,
I think you can, but it's
let's deconstruct a game.
Very difficult.
Right. Let's deconstruct a game.
Well, here's the thing though. Just because it's possible doesn't mean it's a good idea.
You know, there's
anything's possible. We know this with the power of positive thinking.
Right.
Dan.
But is it a good idea? No.
Dan, I could eat a light bulb.
You're about to get deer in the headlights here.
Okay.
I have a Doctor Who story.
Okay.
All right. So, John Pertwee years.
I knew you were going to say Pertwee. I don't know anything about him. And I was like, he's about to say Pertwee.
Because he's the best doctor. Uh-huh. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, go on.
So anyway. Anyway, Doctor Who, John Pertwee years. They do it like an entire season or maybe two seasons. He is trapped on Earth.
Okay.
All right. So now, outside the show, outside the episodes and the canon, the script writers are sitting around talking. It's like, oh, let's write a script. And this producer is like, if you trap Doctor Who on Earth, you can only do one plot. You can only do invasion plots. This is the only thing that's going to work in this universe. And the script writer is like, no, we can't. There's got to be, we're smart people. We're clever people. We could do something that is an invasion plot. And he wrote an episode that was not an invasion plot. And was very good. Doctor Who goes to an alternate universe, the alternate universe where the British are like Nazis and like
the British were invading.
Well, no, but they were doing these experiments.
Wasn't that the Beatles?
And the whole thing is they were destroying their own planet. And I don't mean in some like environmental catastrophe. I mean, they like in about 30 minutes, the planet's going to blow because we were really dumb sort of way. And he goes back and the same thing is happening on Earth. He has to stop it. And it's this really cool episode that is not an invasion story in any way. They interviewed the writer and the writer was like, I did it. I was successful. I was so happy. And what? I will never do that again because we had to jump through so many plot hoops and it just had to bend our everything to make it work. And he was right. You could only do an invasion story.
Well, here, let me give a comparison here that might help us deconstruct what works and what doesn't. Because, Chad, you were not the first person in the Dresden campaign to play an immortal godlike spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I had one before that, where I was playing the river dragon of the Mississippi River straight out of Journey to the West mythology. Okay, we've talked about that story several times.
Right.
And my character did not work. Mm. There was a clash of mythos. The character was in many ways, while I didn't tap the powers that often, the aspects and the powers that I had were wildly out of balance with the rest of the group.
Not the universe.
Not the universe per se, but with the group. I mean, I have no doubt there are things in the universe that could have kicked this character's ass. Mm-hmm. But within the group, I was wildly out of balance in terms of my power, my knowledge, where I had been, what I had done, things like that. And it ended up not working. And it was problematic. It agitated me. It agitated some of the other players. It did not end in a good way. But you turn around and do something very similar. And I have no doubt leveraging probably to some degree the things that you had seen go wrong with my character and made it work. What was the difference? Because in both cases, you've got somebody at a different boss level than the rest of the party.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why did one work and one not?
There are a lot of differences, and I want to start this off from the GM perspective, seeing both characters. Chad's character was a very social character. He made a character that would see the rest of the party as his pack. The character had been alone only because he had been trapped. It wasn't a choice. He had been trapped.
Let me pause you right there. Social character. As a game master, when you're creating plots, situations, scenes, whatever, that right there gives you a lot of options. You don't have to fall back to who's the most powerful when it comes down to who's talking.
Right.
Yeah. In comparison, your dragon was one that had been chosen to be by itself for all this time, or at least not out as much with other people.
Right.
It wasn't a socialized character versus Chad's, who had been in forced seclusion. So right there, there was something in the personality aspect of it, because we've talked about this. There are different things that make characters unique. One of them is the personality. And from a personality standpoint, his character had a built-in need to be around other characters because he had been alone.
See, even isn't that characters, even characters who rejected him.
And isn't that kind of interesting?
Yeah.
That if we use my prior boss levels, a boss level one is personality, boss level two is character and class, boss number three is Galactus, that your character is distinct. He is a boss. He's a beautiful and unique snowflake at both levels one and level three. And so you can have that boss level three, and yet the boss level that comes out is at level one.
Yep. And the level one was something that, while being unique, was something about the character that forced him to be with the other characters.
Okay. What else was different?
Okay, what else was different was the powers particularly being used. From a mechanic standpoint, Chad picked a character that had a lot more subtle powers. Well, it was a powerful character and had a lot of illusions and things going on. Your character was more direct in the use of power. We didn't have a magic user at the point when you had made your character. We do now. But that was something else that kind of tied in. What he did was a character that mechanically, except for situations of espionage and things like that, he mechanically could not outshine anyone at the table in a combat.
Yeah. In fact, our previous worst combat character was John, the psychic vampire, whose most powerful action was I pull out my Glock 9 and I pop a few caps. Coyote was weaker than that, even in the Dresden universe. Another thing is I made him a coward. You know, he's a trickster because he's a coward. And
it really goes back to everything that I think made it work is all at that boss level one. It was all in the personality and the history.
Yeah.
It was the personality that required him to be with the other players. It was the history of having a connection to the other players. It definitely seems to be easier because you created that character when we did a time jump and started the new story arc. Just from my perspective, I think it is always easier to introduce a character off screen.
That was another problem between your character and my characters. You came in mid-flow.
Yeah.
I came in after a very clean break that I tied into.
Well, yeah, and that's something that I want to emphasize right there is one of the frustrations that I had was I did not get a lot of guidance on the existing group, the group template, how the universe worked, things like that. And so my character, I don't think, could have been reconciled at boss level one because I lacked sufficient information to know how to do it. Yeah, and so
we look at Sarah's character. We brought in midway through the campaign. I had some of the same struggles as a GM of I'm introducing a new character in the middle. I just learned I don't like doing that. At the beginning of a story arc, when we Chad created his new character, Dawn created her character, that works well because they all met off screen. But with Sarah's character coming in, she was a pure mortal. So there were some struggles getting things going, but she also knew what the group was. She knew what everyone else was playing. She had heard all of my stories about the game from coming home. Yeah. And so she also had full context, which is what you were missing.
She was also a human. So her interface with the world was she understood it. She understood how humans interact with the modern day. Our characters understood how humans interact with the modern day. So it was like that layer was just a non-issue. Whereas
the character had a built-in lack of understanding of the world.
Yeah. Whereas with your character, it was this whole Oriental thing. and the river god thing and the dragon thing. Very cool. I said it back then. I say it now. Very cool. Really loved it. Dresden doesn't deal with the Oriental thing. So nobody in the Dresden verse knew how to interact with that. Not to say it was impossible, but there was that block there.
I think we could have made it work if it would have come in at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because it's already introducing a character in the middle is difficult.
Yeah.
And it may just be that I'm too new as a GM to be able to do it well. But well, from listening to you guys who aren't new as GMs, that's just difficult to do.
Well, we fell on our face. I mean, honestly, everybody, we fell on our face and we've been gaming for years. Yeah.
We,
you know, it happened.
Well, and what happened there was it wasn't just a character. An entire mythos was introduced.
Yeah.
It was an...
Well, and that gets back to the one point I was making where GM runs into a problem. Is the game about everyone else and not you? Or is the game about you and no one else? Or do you mix that up into evidence? Because we went to the heavenly Chinese...
The Jade Court.
The Jade Court.
Yeah.
And honestly, we went there and it was really cool and cool for you. And everyone was like...
Sitting around their thumb up there.
Yeah, like, great. And then you came back down and then we're doing... And then what are we doing? We're fighting vampire beer lords in St. Louis. You're dealing with heavenly Jade Court stuff. Both are cool, but it's just like one's up here and one's down
and
there.
And
there was no middle ground to meet at.
That's something else I think you have to look at is not just what does the character bring in their boss levels.
Right.
But what boss baggage do they bring? For example, let's go back to saying we're playing reporters of the Daily Planet. And one of us is playing Clark Kent.
Kent Clark.
Wayne.
And now, you could maybe convince me that the campaign arc we're playing is about Clark Kent trying to understand his human side better. You know, as they observed in, I think it was Kill Bill Volume 2.
There's this great cartoon of Clark Kent, you know, and somebody's like, help, help, Superman. And Clark Kent rips his shirt, but he forgot to put on his uniform underneath.
Wow, Gravy didn't drop trow. And
sorry, that just popped into my mind. Continue.
But anyway, you know, you could say that as they observed in Kill Bill Volume 2, that Superman is relatively unique among superheroes in that for him, the alter ego is the normal person, not the superhero. And so you could maybe say we're going to play a campaign about investigating all these strange things and trying to uncover the corruption of LexCorp or whatever. And it's very clear that Superman is not going to use those powers, or if he does, it's really going to be on the down low. It's not going to become a major game distraction, and it'd be an uphill sell for me. But let's say somehow I'm convinced as the game master this is true.
We gave you a bribe.
But what baggage does that bring? I bring in Superman, now do I have to deal with the collector showing up?
Yeah, you have immediately at that point introduced everyone associated with him.
Precisely. Yeah.
Whether they show up or not, they're now there.
In the same way, when I play a river dragon, I bring up the entire cosmology from Journey to the West.
Well, that was one thing that was different with Chad's character was his
I was exiled from the Fae.
His character had that connection to the Fae, but they were already in the story. So he was bringing something in that was already there, that was already going to be brought up more in that story arc, and he was exiled and running from them as well.
Yeah.
So he wasn't going to take us to a court that the group wouldn't be ready to see.
Another thing, too, with like the Superman thing, for the Game Master running it, and for the players, too, really, it's just like, okay, we're all playing.
I have to say, though, this is a really cool story that I would love to read.
Journey to the West or the Superman thing?
The Clark Kent thing.
Because Journey to the West is really good.
Yeah, but I'm talking the Clark Kent thing.
It's a little repetitive, but it is.
Even I wouldn't accept that in the game. And you know how I feel about Superman.
So say we're playing the newspaper reporters. We're playing the team investigating thing, and Wayne's playing Superman. We're investigating the mob bosses, and we all get captured. We almost die, and we get out, and we're like, whew, man, that was cool. And we're like, you know, Wayne, you didn't break once. You didn't do the Superman thing. You know, good for you. That was cool.
But then, Pat died. Why didn't you do the Superman
thing? Yeah, I know, right? And it's just like, okay, we get captured by the Mexican drug cartel that we're investigating, and they're about to kill us in the desert. And it's just like, Wayne, okay, maybe you should do the Superman thing now, because we're all going to die.
And no.
Not all of us.
Wayne will just play dead until they leave.
Yeah.
And then he'll cry because all of his friends are dead.
Yes.
I think the one way I would accept that is, like, as a GM, the one way I think I would accept that would be if it were one of the many storylines where Superman has lost his powers.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with a Clark Kent that is not Superman anymore. You used to be powerful, and now you're having to go out and actually
And Jimmy walk. Olsen stole your powers.
Well, I mean, if you're investigating LexCorp, maybe Lex Luthor did it. Yeah. And we're looking for financial corruption and tax evasion, and he's looking for the vial of transgenic whatever.
Transgender.
Transgender acidic.
Yes. Acidic, yeah.
That took away his powers.
That's right.
That would be good for a short story arc.
Is that a campaign? Yeah, probably not.
Because eventually, Superman's going to get his powers back. And then he's like, that's his goal.
Yeah, and eventually that has to happen.
Uh-huh.
So I think a good rule of thumb here is don't do it. When in doubt, don't do it. I'm not saying it can't be done.
I think you can make it work. Because I got to say, I really loved my Coyote character.
The biggest thing, though, with your Coyote character, and we already touched on this, though, is mechanically...
Yeah.
He was no more powerful than the rest of the party.
Well, and it wasn't... The mechanics also tied in with the story and background, too.
It did.
Because, yeah, he was an immortal god and all this sort of stuff, but he wasn't Q.
Exactly.
It works in Dresden
because you can set that up that way with the Dresden characters. You had the same power level that we did. Like you're saying, your story, your god story was in your background.
Yeah, and I never said that the Coyote could shoot lasers from his eyes and he was just choosing not to, or it got taken away. He can never do any of that crap.
Right.
He was just really good at lying.
So in a setting like that, it's very possible. In other games, it may not be. And in other games, you try to play something like the Splat class that you mentioned. I think that's a very different scenario.
And we're still talking at this point, mechanics and power levels. What if we're just dealing with a personality issue? You have a party of dwarves and you have an elf that is a racist that hates dwarves. That can be a huge problem.
Yeah.
Dan, you've talked about playing a character that was, I think it was you that played the character that was racist against aliens.
No, I've played a lot of those.
But
I've lost count.
In that storyline, you were all aboard a ship, so you had a reason to stay together.
Yes.
But if you're an adventuring party and one character hates all the other characters, why do they stay with them? And why does the party stay with that character?
I was trying to go that way earlier because, yes, I think
that's going on in our Sunday game.
Yes. Right, yeah, and I think that can be an issue. That is a boss thing, too, because that's a particular character trait of one of the characters.
And that is purely at level one, dealing with mechanics in any way.
And it does beg the question of why do you stay with the group? You need to have at least a very loose reason for everybody to be together.
Here's an interesting situation. Now, we're talking about Dawn's character, my wife. We're all playing in this dwarf campaign, and she's playing an elf, which is... that might say everyone's playing dwarves, but we got the one elf, and that's really weird. But it works within the story, how we set it up.
Okay.
So she did not start out playing this young, sort of semi-racist elf who doesn't like, dwarves and all their icky things, and they're really smelly and all that sort of stuff. But that was not her intention. She did not make that character. She made a different character. And then we played two games. And in the course of role-playing through those two games, her character just kind of fell into that. And it's just like, when you play a character and you really have to role-play it to understand it, you start picking up these paces and these points and stuff.
It reminds me of your Skies of Glass character that you wanted to talk redemption on.
Right.
That went even more evil.
Yeah, I just couldn't pull him up from the nose.
It was the same situation, except there was a history there with your character and the others to pull them together.
So, and her character is going down this path to where it's just like, she even says, this was not my intention with the character, and I don't think the character will fit with the group now. It's a different kind of character now. And her solution to this is she's thinking about playing a different character. She made a list. She's there with a contingent of elves.
Right.
And Dawn's one of those characters, and Wayne loves her for this, is she just doesn't make her character. She makes all the characters that surround her character. And makes this web of relationships and stuff. That's really her thing. And she was like, I think it might be better for me to play her brother than to play her.
Well, and I have to give her... minute, I thought you said she was going to play the fire cleric that my character flirts with. That would get awkward for me.
I have to give her props because I think that is a virtue for any gamer, is to be willing to sacrifice a character on the altar of group function.
Well, I think it's good for two reasons. Well, one is that she played her character true.
Right.
And she followed it where it went.
But it ain't working anymore.
But it ain't working. And then she's...
And I think you could have the same problem come at the higher boss levels. I mean, I think most people at some point in their GMing career have regretted or been present when the game master should have regretted something they gave a player. You gave them that magical item that is way out of balance. Let's go back to the superhero things. We're all playing reporters of the Daily Planet. None of us are Clark Kent. Yet in the course of the campaign, Wayne decides to give one of us the Green Lantern ring. At this point, we have just created a problem. And this, I am a big believer in, look, if it becomes necessary, if a character's not working out, the game, the enjoyment, the story, the socialization, that is far more important to me than continuity. Screw continuity. It's not a novel.
Absolutely.
It's a social activity. Get rid of that character. Get rid of that power.
We are trying to win the world championship of role-playing games.
Right.
We're just a bunch of friends sitting around some beer and having fun telling stories.
Let it be done and reconcile everything back together. If Dawn needs to ditch that character or rewrite that part of the personality, or in different examples, you need to take an item away, you need to whatever, do it, because that is really where the damage ought to be done, not to the campaign as a whole.
And don't keep spinning the wheel. Don't keep grinding the gears and just trying to push through it and muscle through it. If there's an issue, deal with the issue.
Right.
Talk about the issue. It doesn't even have to be a big deal. It's just like, it doesn't have to be the, okay, guys, we got some serious business we have to talk about here. Dawn is a racist against dwarves.
And her character is too.
And in the game as well. You know, it's something you can make the conversation fun. And Dan, you and I, and we have gone over this again and again and again on the show, drawing different lessons from it. We had a problem with Gnarl.
Yeah.
Gnarl wasn't really even the problem. It was the situation that happened. Gnarl was never the problem. The situation that happened around it. And what did we do? We got a couple of beers. We sat down.
And we figured it out, yeah.
And in figuring it out, we got really creative.
Yeah.
And I think we made it better. We made the situation better. Cool stuff came from it. So, yeah, you know, these sort of conversations dealing with these problems does not have to be the big deal. It could be fun. It could be creative.
Yeah.
As long as the conversation happens.
And it's all in the approach.
Awesome. I think that's going to wrap up this topic, at least for now. We, of course, we just recorded three episodes back to back with no forum feedback in between.
I think they should keep the headphones on another week, just in case.
Just in case. Because somebody might say something on the forums that gets us going again.
That's true.
But for now, it looks like part three will be the end of the series. So thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games. And we will get to you next time.
The Abouts.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.